Next time, you guys got to sing that. Next week, you're singing that theme song. And I've never noticed how he zips it all the way up and then down. I'm going to wear a next cardigan sweater for Andy next week. Okay, guys? So make sure he's got one. Hey, it's so good to see you. I always love coming to the Fountain. It's a fun place. It's amazing to watch someone you knew when they were 18 grow up and become a dad and build a church and serve all of you. So thanks, Andy, for letting me come back and see, man. I didn't even think he was going to graduate, but he made it out. He made something of himself, too. Now, you could always tell Andy was going to do some great things, and thanks for letting me be here. Gosh, what a great theme to think about your neighbors in this time of Lent and preparing for Easter, when we're reminded in vivid ways that God thinks of us and sees us. What a great way to think about all that. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but you're on the way home from work, and you get a phone call, and it goes something like this.
Hey, honey.
Let me say too, if my wife ever uses any kind of term of endearment like honey or sweetie or anything like that, this is something big is coming after that. Okay, that's not the normal. So,
hey, honey. I know it's been a long day, and I know you're driving home from Savannah on a Friday during rush hour and before a holiday week, and you've been in the car for 5 hours. But if you don't mind dropping by Publix and grabbing some milk.
Now, in my family, there is no such thing as a gallon of milk at Publix. It's that and something else, right? I mean, it's not just one thing. So I know this is a big ask. Now I've been married for 12 years almost, and so I kind of know the right response to this question, right? You guys know what I'm talking about. The right response is you take a deep sigh, so it's a little passive aggressive. Maybe a little too passive-aggressive this time.
I guess there's nothing I would rather do on the way home from Savannah on Friday after 5 hours of driving than get you some milk.
All right, that may have been a little bit too much. Okay, that may just a little bit too, you may know a little bit too much about my marriage, that I'm a little bit passive-aggressive sometimes. Anyway, so then there's this long period of silence, this pregnant pause in our conversation.
Great. Well, while you're there, I put a few things on Wunderlist.
Any of you use Wunderlist? It's this app you can put all your shopping on.
Yeah, and you don't have to get them, but if you have time, do you mind picking up a few things?
And I'm like, and then mysteriously at that moment, all the kids begin to start screaming. It's like, I gotta go. So I can't even respond to this scenario. So now I am dumped. I've got a gallon of milk plus who knows what's on the Wunderlist, and I'm driving, so I can't look at it because I'm a good driver. And so I get to Publix, and I look down at Wunderlist, and there's 25 things on there, like specific things that nobody ever ordered, like fish sauce. Where do you find fish sauce? It's this long. But I did it, right? Now, let me just be clear that never in our marriage in 12 years has she called me and said, honey, I'm working on this Saturday. I know you have a bunch of people over to watch the football game, and I think we've run out of inches on the TV. Do you mind stopping by Best Buy? We really could use an 80-inch television if you could just... And, I know you've got a couple other things you need, like some new Bluetooth headphones. I put it on Wunderlist. Just... That does not happen. No, just for the record. Home Depot? Nope. Never been sent to Home Depot at the last minute of the way. It's always to Publix for milk. Sometimes in the middle of this kind of like holiday season, this like religious holiday season where we're in Lent preparing for Easter, maybe it's around Christmas, any of the high holy days, these are the moments where I feel kind of like the holidays kind of like that thing of milk. I'm on this big journey, and I work for the church, too, so like I'm doing good church work, but it's so busy. There's so many responsibilities, and then I've got two kids, and I've got a wife, and there's all this stuff happening, and then somehow in the midst of all of that, and especially spring semester, when I'm working on the campus, there's so many things that happen in the spring semester. I'm right in the middle of appointment season, where we send pastors all over. I mean, it's somewhere I've got to find time to pull over and experience Lent. This time of preparedness, of stillness, And then somewhere just in a couple of weeks, I'm going to, or this Sunday, Palm Sunday, and then Holy Week, and then Easter, and I got to get all prepared for that. I mean, where does one ever find time? It feels to me sometimes like these religious holidays are like stopping for a gallon of milk on the way home from a long day. I think that Jesus kind of gets us, though, in that. That he understands the movement that we're in, that we call life. Because if you read Mark, and Mark's sort of betrayal of Jesus, it's this very active movement. Jesus is on a journey. He is dead set heading to Jerusalem. We'll get there next week at Palm Sunday. But we're moving from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, and everything important is going to happen here. And this is all just leading up. It's precursor. It's foretelling of what's going to happen in Jerusalem. So there's this very quick, rapid movement. And then they went this, and then this, and quickly they were here. It's a very rapid movement of Jesus getting from one place to the other and encountering people along that journey. So I think he gets this idea of movement, and that we're focused and we're moving and we're going. And then there's another example of this, and this is at the end of Matthew 28. It's called the Great Commission. And he's gathered all of his disciples together for this culminating moment in his ministry before he ascends up into heaven. And what we've seen happen so far at this point is he's been with us, he's walked with us, he's created miracles and things happened, and he's even created some political stirs, and he's leading in and going into Jerusalem. He's there, and there's Palm Sunday, but then he's convicted and he's crucified, and all of that has happened. Then he's risen out of the tomb and alive again, and here he's with his disciples. And it's this wonderful moment. It's almost like you hear the orchestra playing in the background, and you could hear James Earl Jones' voice. Oh, therefore. It was a powerful voice at the end of Matthew 28. Hear it now. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Now, this is a little piece that I sort of, in my meditation last night before today, captured me. This idea that, okay, so here's his disciples, all the people who followed him, and they just went through all that that just happened, right? I mean, they saw the miracles, they were walking, they were going, they were in Jericho, they were in Jerusalem, they saw the crucifixion, they saw the empty tomb, and now they're together with a guy who was formerly dead, okay? April Fools. Formerly dead. And they doubted. You see that? They worshiped him, okay, but some doubted. So not only did they doubt, but they were obviously doubting. It was an obvious apparent doubt. And so he's pulled all of these people together, and he begins to tell them something really important. Because he says, Jesus came near and spoke to them. This is where James Earl Jones, I've received all authority in heaven and on earth. That's a lot of authority. Heaven, all authority on heaven and earth. This is a big, whatever he's going to say next is a big deal. But remember, what he's about to say next is not just for believers, good followers, disciples, but also for unbelievers and doubters and not sure people. It's for people who got it together and people who don't have it together. He doesn't have a caveat. He doesn't say, all authority on heaven and earth. And listen up, for those people who believe this is for you, for the doubters, this is not for you. Just no, it's for all of us. Therefore, go. Now, this phrase is where I think sometimes we miss a piece of what's happening here. Because for me, the therefore go is we have had this long journey, and these disciples get here, and now they've all sort of, they figured it out, right? This is a group of people who know that Jesus, who Jesus is and what happened to Jesus and how he's triumphed death. And like in your mind, in my mind, it is for all those people who figured it out and understand who Jesus is, therefore go. Now it is time for you to go. But what we encounter in this is that it's actually for the doubters too. And that actually the translation here is not so much therefore go as it is more likely as you are going. There's no some radical change. We're not waiting for you to like all of a sudden, aha, I understand Jesus, now I can do something. No, instead, it is as you are going, as you are following, as you are being discipled, you will begin to disciple. Because then it says, therefore go, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. So wait a second. You mean to tell me that doubters can disciple? Doubters can baptize. Doubters can lead others into faith. Now that, to me, starts to blow my mind because here's one of the important parts of this lesson is I don't have it all together, right? So I'm one of the doubters. So I get to therefore go and like, oh, well, I'm not really all got it together, so this isn't for me. I don't have to finish this. I'm done. I've read the book. I finished the chapter, and I'm done. This is good. One day I'll get it together, and then I can read the rest of this. But no, this sits squarely in the middle of who I am as a doubter, too, and says, you know what? Even you, as you're going, as you're following me, as you're following Jesus, you too can disciple and baptize and transform. And the important part that often is left off in this great commission is the last line. Look, I myself will be with you every day until the end of the present age. It's not about us in the end, but it is also about us. That Jesus with us is what enables us, even as doubters and even as people who haven't got it all together, are enabled and given the power to disciple and to baptize and to transform people's lives in the midst of our everyday life as we're going. That's pretty remarkable to think about, that even I, as a broken person, could still be used to take someone else's life and transform it because Jesus is with me. So what does this look like in practicality? Because that's great to talk in sort of in theory that I can do this. Well, there's a story with Jesus. It actually happens in Mark, and it is right before Jesus moves into Jerusalem. In fact, like the very next chapter, chapter 11, he's in Jerusalem. Okay, so it is right at the end of the journey. If you remember, I've talked about Mark, it's moving from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, and that's the end goal. So it's sort of right at the end of the, before the big stuff happens. And Jesus is walking through Jericho, and it talks about the crowds have gathered. If you can imagine crowds all pulled together, this is the last leg, it's close, it's sort of a suburb, kind of like Johns Creek is to Atlanta. It's a suburb of Jerusalem. And so he's coming through the main thoroughfare, and there's crowds gathering, probably people who celebrate Jesus, like we'll see on Palm Sunday next week, but also because he's a political figure and he's wreaking havoc in the system there, they're probably counter-protesters. And so there's this loud voice, both sides all around, and people are pressing in. And in the middle of that story, it flashes over to the side. And it names this man on the side Bartimaeus. And he's laying in the gutter of the road and describes him as blind. Bartimaeus is some important things. When someone is named, that means that they are an important figure. Not everyone has names. Young rich ruler, the woman at the well. We don't get all the names, but when someone's named, naming is important. Bartimaeus is on the side of the road and he's blind. He knows that Jesus is coming through and he knows this is probably his last chance to meet him. So he begins to yell out, Jesus, Son of God, have mercy on me. And his friends who are gathered around him start shush him. We don't want to draw any attention over here. We don't want people to see our homeless people and our beggars and our blind people. No, just let's keep it clean. Let's not talk about that. But he yells louder and louder. But Jesus is walking in the midst of this, and as the crowds are pressing in, Jesus still yet hears the voice of Bartimaeus. I kind of get this now as a parent, because you know your child's cry, right? You don't know your newest son's cry yet, but it'll be seared in your mind very soon. But you know the sound of your child. You know the sound of your spouse or your best friend, and you could hear it out of a crowd. Jesus hears the sound of Bartimaeus' voice. And in the midst of a passage and in the midst of a story of Jesus in Mark, where it's all about urgency of movement, we see Jesus, it says, Jesus stood still. He stopped for a poor blind beggar in the gutter of the road and turns and asks who it is and calls him forward. And in that moment, the miracle is twofold. First, Jesus restores his vision, but more importantly, the greater miracle for me to understand in this scenario is that he restores the vision of that community too. because they went from not seeing the beggar on the side of the road to all of a sudden seeing him. So not only is the vision of the person restored, but the vision of the community is restored too. So much so that this man becomes so important to the story that his name is remembered. His story is captured in the Gospels, and people today teach it. On the way, will you stop by, grab some milk? See Bartimaeus for me. Restore his vision. Restore the vision of the community. Sometimes I think that we think about words like evangelism and discipleship and faith sharing, all those, and we wrap them up in this cloud of mysticism and craziness, that there's these powerful things that we have to have tracts and say certain ways. I used to have a friend always ask me to pray the sinner's prayer, and it's like you have to, like, there's some certain prayer you have to teach someone to pray in order for Jesus to forgive them. There's all of that sort of religiosity wrapped up in it. And what happens then is we become like those people who believe that we have to have all of that together before we can do any of this. Before we can evangelize or share who we are or share our story, we have to first figure out our story. But I think the story today shares for us is that we don't have to have it figured it out, but that on our way, we have the opportunity to see people, to restore vision, and to help our community see people too. There's another example. Take a look at this video and think about how ways someone else's vision might have been restored.
And finally tonight here, one-on-one with a legend, the voice behind an iconic Star Wars moment. But it turns out it was all an accident, he says, that James Earl Jones became the voice of Darth Vader. But few know how his life began, the boy once afraid to talk. Tonight, back in front of a brand new audience, James Earl Jones is our person of the week. Up from the subway into New York's Times Square, and right to the famed Sardi's in the theater district where he was waiting.
Mr. Jones.
David, how are you?
What an honor.
James Earl Jones, whose voice is legendary.
No, I am your father.
Listen to this behind-the-scenes moment. The voice of the actor who actually wore the Darth Vader suit.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away.
Then listen to James Earl Jones.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away.
About to turn 84, he's back on Broadway.
You've been on Broadway many times before.
I've been on Broadway some, but it's so wonderful to be back on Broadway.
This time performing in You Can't Take It With You, playing a wise grandfather.
You have said before that it was your grandfather who had the most impact on you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my grandfather was Papa. He was a farmer. Very simple man.
A simple man who led the family and led his grandson, James Earl, through a challenging childhood.
Your family didn't have a lot of money.
No. During rationing time, we had some sugar. We hoarded away, and we grew the rest of our food.
But that wasn't his only hurdle. He was a boy who stuttered. He spent years not talking at all, until one day he wrote a poem in high school.
There was a teacher who looked at one of your poems and said, "This is so good, I want you to prove that you wrote this."
Yeah.
Do you remember standing up and reading that?
Oh, yeah, and getting through it without stuttering.
From poverty, from silence, a boy who would later excel.
The fact that George Lucas chose your voice.
That's an accident.
You don't mind the accident now, looking back, right?
Oh, no. I'm very proud to have been a part of that.
The boy born in Mississippi and who grew up on a farm in Michigan ended up being the voice.
And who was a stutterer.
And who was a stutterer.
That's his Darth Vader.
So many iconic roles coming to America.
People will come, Ray.
Then that speech in Field of Dreams. All these years later, we study his caricature right there on the wall. Love and Peace, James Earl Jones.
I'm still the same person.
Was the young man on the wall?
Yeah.
And for this reporter begging for a lesson?
Now listen, I do the news every night, and I can only dream of a voice with the kind of resonance that your voice has.
Our voices are very similar, I'm afraid.
You think so?
Yeah, I have less control of mine, though. You do? I'm serious.
Really?
And he revealed to me how he prepares before the fans arrive at that theater every night.
We yell at the seats.
You yell at the empty seats?
Yeah.
I'm going to practice that tonight before the broadcast.
And make no mistake, they were all there for him.
Thank you very much.
An honor.
An honor indeed. And so we choose James Earl Jones. And by the
what I love about this story is there's three instances of just on your way home. First, he looks back to his grandfather, who was just a grandfather. But he wasn't just a grandfather. He was great at his role as grandfather and empowering and caring for his grandson. But then you almost miss it, the story of his teacher, who gives him a chance to get his voice. He's a writer, a stutterer, and doesn't believe he can do it. And the amazing thing about this is I don't think probably in her life she looks back to that moment and remembers it as, oh, this is the moment I gave James Earl Jones his voice. She was just doing her job. As conflicted and as not perfect as she was as a teacher, she was just there doing her job, and she gave a man his voice. And then there was by accident, he found his voice as Darth Vader. Do you see how God, just in the middle of our life, as we're going, continues to bubble up in places and through people that we never imagined? And here's the thing. You're that teacher. You're that grandfather. You're that accident. You're that surprise at the grocery store. If you allow yourself, even if you're a doubter, or you've got it all figured out, to be a discipler, to be a faith sharer, that you too can restore someone's voice. You too can restore their sight. You too can help a community begin to see their neighbors. Because remember, God is with you till the end of the days. So maybe that call really should be, the Great Commission should be something more like this. Hey, I know you're on your way home. I know it's been a long day. You got a lot of things to do. You got a lot on your mind, but do you mind stopping by Publix? I just need a gallon of milk. And while you're there, I got a few people I'd like for you to see. But guess what? I'll meet you there, and you don't have to see them by yourself. I think that's what our call is as Christians. Let us pray. God, we're grateful for this community, this group of neighbors and believers, people who have things figured out and people who don't have things figured out. We ask that you pour out your Spirit on us and transform us from just normal, ordinary people to people who have been called by you, who recognize that in us and through us and the ordinary, mundane parts of our life, we've been called as we're going to be faith sharers, storytellers of how our lives have been changed, how others have been changed, so that we might begin to help see the world changed because of you. Help us to be sight restorers and voice givers, seers in the midst of chaos, so that we can help restore our community to see our neighbors, and for our neighbors to see you. In Christ's name we pray.